Hello and welcome to the Still Parents podcast. I'm Dan with Ryan and Matt from the Lily Mae Foundation, and it's Baby Loss Awareness Week. So every day during Baby Loss Awareness Week over the last couple of years, we've been releasing our mini episodes, which we've been doing again this week. However, today's episode, we thought we'd bring you something a little bit different because sometimes these two plonkers and me, us three plonkers, we sometimes appear on other podcasts. And I thought it would be interesting to give an insight into that. So instead of Ryan and Matt asking the questions, this time they'll be in the seat answering them. How did that feel?
It's actually really nice to be able to go on another podcast.
Yeah.
Especially a podcast that's obviously based around loss.
Yeah.
And also it's nice to be able to give something back to Kelly, who obviously helps us an awful lot with our podcast, with, you know, the voiceovers and everything like that. Mm. He has obviously a huge audience in the US. So it's nice to be able to give something back.
This is the Still Parents podcast appearing on the Dad Always podcast with our ambassador, Kelly Jean-Philippe, for a mostly American audience. So be interesting to hear if they understand us.
Yeah, and if we know the king.
Yeah, we all know the king down there.
Or David Beckham.
Yeah. This is it, and all the details and the links and how you can get in touch with Kelly and follow his podcast on the description. Here we go. It's the Still Parents podcast with Dad Always.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more. To the ones we hoped for but never met, and the ones whose time with us was all too brief, this is Dad Always. Fatherhood beyond loss. To new listeners and returning listeners of the podcast, welcome to Dad Always. This is a series of episodes for Baby Loss Awareness Week, and I am thrilled to have three of the most incredible voices in this space that I've met over the past several years, and more than just colleagues and people that share similar interests, we've become actual friends. So it's always exciting to have the Still Parents podcast on the Dad Always podcast. So gentlemen, how are you doing?
Podcast friend.
It is an Obed, isn't it, Kelly?
I think that's about it, Kelly. We're done then, Kelly. Yeah, we're done. That's it.
Like, yeah, well, thank you for coming. And anyone who knows and who has been a follower of this podcast, when we were the Miscarriage Dad podcast, now the Dad Always podcast, you are already accustomed to hearing me speak about the Still Parents podcast and how they are the inspiration for me personally to even begin podcasting about this topic and these topics in particular. So for new listeners of the podcast, gentlemen, can you just give us a quick summary of who you are, how the Still Parents podcast came to be?
Let me start, chaps.
Yeah, go for it, Ryan.
Yeah. So my name's Ryan Jackson. Along with Matt and Dan, we founded the Still Parents podcast back in November 2020. I founded a charity called the Lily Mae Foundation, which I founded, along with my wife, Amy, back in 2010, following the loss of our daughter, Lily Mae, to stillbirth at full term. The reason we started the podcast was to give men a platform to be able to vocalise their thoughts and feelings around grief and to reduce the isolation that males feel when they've lost a baby. So that's enough from me, because otherwise I'll stop these boys from talking.
Go for it, Matt.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm Matt. I'm a bereaved parent to Callie, who we lost in 2016. She was our firstborn. And as Ryan said, just started a podcast, but really wanted to stay involved. And I've loved every minute of it. And it's been great doing it with these two guys as well. And just anything I can do to talk about baby loss and to get the subject out into the public eye, I think is always important. And I'm a big believer about it. So, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, hi, I'm Dan. And
So as Ryan said, it was, what, 5 years ago, which is still mad to think about. It was during lockdown, and I haven't lost, I've got two children, I haven't lost a baby. And we came onto the podcast to sort of provide that angle, maybe for other friends who have lost. So to try and, you know, just learn and understand how to have these conversations. And we decided to just put the conversations we were already having on the internet. That was pretty much it. And we started on lockdown, on Zoom during lockdown. And now we've built a studio, and 5 years later, here we are still going. But I will say it's the strangest thing, because, and I always feel uncomfortable saying this, because I wouldn't have met these two guys if their children hadn't have died, which is mad to think about, because they're such an integral part of my everyday, excuse me, I only got my voice back yesterday. They're such an integral part of my everyday life now. So to think that that's the only reason I know them, because, you know, let's be real, even though we're in a small, tiny island country compared to your massive landmass, Kelly, our paths just wouldn't have crossed. So yeah, and we do this podcast, and we're proud of the community that we're building. We're proud that we've been able to become friends and create a synergy with yourself, Kelly, and your podcast. So yeah, that's us.
And you guys have, I mean, the podcast itself, right, has gained recognition over the years, and especially now the podcast has been recognized for a pretty unique award. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so. we're quite.
What are you laughing at?
It sounds weird to talk about, right? It sounds weird to talk the fact we've got.
Well, yeah, at the time of recording, yeah, it's tomorrow, so, the awards. So,
So we're actually at an awards ceremony, tomorrow evening. So it's the British Podcast Awards, which is, it's actually a big deal, to be honest, because when you look at a lot of the podcasts, and hosts of podcasts that are going to be there, in terms of sort of celebrity, if you like, across Britain and what have you, they're all very renowned and well-known TV presenters, radio presenters, and so forth, who have then obviously ventured into podcasting as well. So to be able to be at an award ceremony with people like that is really big for us, because it validates exactly what we're trying to do. And it's for us, it's not actually about the winning as such. It's just the fact that we're there in that room in the first place, and that we've been nominated in two categories for the best parenting podcast and also specialist podcast, fills us with a huge. We're extremely grateful, obviously, to be noticed, and it just goes to show that what we are doing is. Providing a support platform, support network for so many people in a what I call a niche audience, because,
yeah,
you know, Dan, you've always said before, you know, why would anybody want to come on and talk about the worst day of their life, or, you know, but what we're doing is enabling people to vocalize maybe the inner thoughts they have that they're not able to necessarily speak about with other people who don't have an understanding of this world.
I think that's what it is, isn't it? It's just normalizing that conversation. Because if I listen back to the original episodes, I was nervous as hell, because I was like, the last thing I want to do is offend anyone. But the idea of it is, can we replace what we're doing in this particular episode right now, and imagine, can we have this same conversation in a bar, in a restaurant, a bus stop, wherever that is? And for the awards, I mean, obviously, if we win any of them, this will not be my answer. But ahead of time, just to get the nomination is a huge recognition, because, as Ryan said, we're up against some juggernauts, I suppose, of the media industry, and there's just us three, like, you know, bellends sat in an office somewhere being like, "Ooh, podcast friends." So whether we win anything or not, we've already kind of, this sounds cheesy as hell, but we've already kind of won, because we get them. It's given a boost to the platform.
Yeah.
So whether the, It's a bit like, so you know, like the Grammy Awards, and after when someone's been nominated, like let's say Adele, and you see an advert, it'd be like, oh, 5-time nominated Grammy Award artist, or, and I never really notice if it's nominated or winner. It's just as long as you've got the word next to it. Yeah. So that gives us a greater platform and greater exposure to bring in new listeners who, unfortunately, you know, they shouldn't be, we don't want them to listen to this podcast, but we want them to be aware and wary that it is there if they need to.
Yeah.
Or if they need to tell a friend about it or something like that.
And how fitting, right? Because this is, October is Baby Loss Awareness Month. And so for that to be something that is happening in the month of October as well, and for you guys to be in this room surrounded by all these people who are in the podcasting space, just the fact that you're there is itself a form of awareness, right? I feel like it's just going to be very palpable through the in the room, right? Yeah. Like, who the hell are these guys? And what is?
I think we missed the trick there. I think we in the write up for the award, we should have put, oh, the awards happen to be the same month as Baby Loss Awareness Week. Just put some emotional, like, you know, weight on them to go, well, we've got to make sure they win it.
Yeah.
Well, we just walk into the room and say, just give us the award, it's Baby Loss Awareness Month.
Could you imagine? Like, who are these guys?
But again, if we go dressed up like the Dumb and Dumber people, like in really bright suits, we'll get noticed anyway. And then
can I tell Kelly something here? So in our the WhatsApp group that the three of us have got, last week Ryan put in he put in a picture and went, lads, this is gonna be my outfit for the awards. What do you think? And then Matt went, oh, I'm going to put a picture in too. And he put a picture in. And neither of these two noticed that they...
I did. No, I said Matt copied me.
Yeah, Ryan noticed.
Oh, did you mention Ryan? I thought it was after I brought it up. Because it looked like they were picking out a school uniform because they're pretty much wearing exactly the same clothes.
Well,
rock up wearing the same thing.
I've done completely opposite. I've gone the other way around now. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going as a little Dutch girl.
Don't do this that, because then we'll look like we're naughty males.
Yeah.
Imagine we walk in the entrance, start having a sword fight like on Dumb and Dumber. Right? I'm out.
It would make me laugh if we weren't allowed in.
Yeah. I think that would be the wrong kind of awareness.
Yeah, let's leave that there then. So we're seeing these guys tomorrow. We're heading off to that there, London, which is about an hour and a half on the train from where we are. And if we do actually win, I think we'll be back in about a month.
Do you get to meet the royal family at all if you win an award?
No. What a question.
That would be amazing, Kelly.
No, we wouldn't get to meet the royal family, unfortunately. But that would be good, because Prince William's a Villa fan, and I'm a Villa fan. that would be a nice subject.
Common ground.
Bit of synergy there. But no, the royal family, they're safe for more important people than us.
This series of conversation, we are exploring the theme of platitudes. And I think the greater theme for Baby Loss Awareness Week is together we care. And in my mind, that's my spin on what together we care means. Because if we are really talking about the way that the community rallies around, or the way that the community comes together in order to care about baby loss awareness, one of the most prominent ways that people want to show that they care is through what they say. Mm. And I know that you all have experiences, whether you've experienced baby loss or not, in being in a very tough place, and then someone comes alongside you to try to support you and give you a pickup. But the things that they say, man, are just, you just want to punch somebody in the face, or you just want to tell somebody off. So
Ryan would punch them in the face.
I'm sure. I mean, especially in the context of you recently just lost your child, right? And for someone to come in and say the wrong thing. So that's what I'm going to invite us to talk about for the next several minutes on the theme of platitudes, particularly Ryan's favorite one. Everything happens for a reason.
Oh, does it now? Does it now? My fist going in your face happened for a reason. Yeah.
I think would actually have a more logical explanation than someone.
Exactly.
Coming, 100%.
Exactly. That one for me, I can't stand that. I can't stand that. And whether it's baby loss related or anything, when people say everything happens for a reason, it's simplistic, it's dismissive, it's isolated, can, you know, cause isolation, makes you feel isolated. But I think the main thing is it invalidates grief, in my opinion. It doesn't actually allow the person that's saying it to be able to have open dialogue, open conversation with the person, with the mother or the father or grandparent, whoever that may be. It doesn't allow open dialogue. It's just bang straight away. In my opinion, it invalidates grief, and it's to try and, they're obviously potentially uncomfortable in that situation, and it's said, I think, to almost stop the conversation. Because it's very much a point. It's not an open ended question. It's not even you know. And that's how I look at it.
Yeah.
And it's just completely and utterly simplistic. It's a simplistic way of looking at things.
One of the things that I want to do in this conversation is to approach it from a different standpoint. The standpoint that I want to approach it from is, let's give the person who said it the benefit of the doubt. Mm. So, what do you think? Let's just get behind the saying, for as blood-curdling and as upsetting as it is. What do you think, if we're giving the person who said it the benefit of the doubt, what do you think is behind that saying?
I think what Ryan said before, just hit it on the head a little bit, is to kind of take away the awkwardness that they feel around the whole subject. Because, you know, we've talked about this plenty of times on the podcast, and again, Ryan has said this very decently, is that the British view of grief is, you've said, Ryan, you have a cup of tea and crack on, you know, like that, or you know, and in general, the grief, we don't, I mean, look, it's a very generalistic way of saying it, but we don't do grief very well in this country. Mm-hmm. But I think it's probably more, it's got better over time. I think the generation that we were brought up in certainly didn't do grief very well. I lost my granddad in 2005. And even then in 2005, it was like, it was really sad. I really struggled with it. But like in general, like for example, and this is just me as a family example, my dad is the best bloke in the world, but I didn't see him cry over it. He may have done away from me. He didn't show it in front of me. And as another small example, Crystal said that when she lost her mom when she was 11, her dad, she can't remember her dad ever crying, right? So, and he probably did, but he didn't.
Is that the generational thing as well?
Well, that's what I mean. I think from the generational side of things, I think over time, hopefully, that it's the dial is starting to change. But I think the fact that someone says everything happens for a reason, I think this is what people used to say in the past. And they just then write, okay, that's swept under the carpet. We'll just
carry on. Crack. Yeah.
I think if you're giving the benefit of the doubt to the person who uses the term, you know, everything happens for a reason. And like I've said previously, that in my opinion, that just invalidates grief. You've almost got to flip it on its head and say that you, and the person that uses that type of term should be thinking about actually validating the grief rather than invalidating it. And it can be comments like that, platitudes like that, are 9 times out of 10 said because of because they feel uncomfortable in a situation that they have no understanding of. So know what, as a bereaved parent, if somebody spoke to me and said, you know, everything happens for a reason or any other type of platitude, I'm not looking for them to fix it, because I know as a parent they can't fix it, because believe me, I've beaten myself up enough to know that even I couldn't fix it. So I don't want you to try and do it. What I want you to do is validate my feelings. And I also think that some people say things that I mean, obviously I know what your job is, Kelly. And I remember somebody saying to me once that God does things to test people.
That's right along the same lines, isn't it?
My response to that, and I pardon my French.
I don't know if I want to hear this.
God's a wanker, because why would he do something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And put somebody through that much pain. Why couldn't he just, I don't know, throw a squirrel out in the road in front of me so I've got to brake a little bit harder or something like that? It's when that was something that somebody had said to me, not knowing what my beliefs were at that time. And I think people say things and do things because it's them feeling uncomfortable in that moment or in that.
Yeah.
But I can balance that out in a way, because I am a religious man, and I can balance that out and say, even though I've had that said to me before, and even though I'm a religious man, I still find it difficult to get to that point, even through my faith, because I think... And I think that if you are saying that, well, you know, God has a plan or something like this, it really did to start with test my faith when we lost Callie, because I was like, well, as Ryan has said, if this is the plan, then it's a pretty shit plan, right?
Mm.
But again, it's just people. It's like they dance around the subject and then they want you to dance with them. And then when you don't start dancing, they're just dancing on their own and feel all awkward, you know? And the fact is that they almost need you to then not make them feel awkward. But I always find that the people who, if they've said that to me and then I engage with them, I get two kind of reactions. They either are so closed-minded that they just won't take back what I say, or they're then open-minded and they actually join the conversation, in my view, correctly, and open their mind up. Dan has always said, and Dan's a big one for this, and he's absolutely right, and it happens all over social media all the time. We can disagree. Yeah. We aren't trying to change people's opinions, but just respect my opinion. I'll respect your opinion, and we can just be in that point. But the problem is the world we live in. You get people shout you down, especially on social media, say, it's this way. No, it's not this way. It's your opinion. Fine.
Yeah.
But it's not my opinion.
I don't know why I think social media is to blame for that, isn't it? Because where's the art of conversation gone? It doesn't mean that because you have a different viewpoint, we then need to attempt to destroy each other. It's fine. Like, okay, listen, I'm not going to agree with what you've just said, but you've given me some knowledge about the reasons why you think that way. We're not starting this conversation to go, right, by the end of it, you're going to agree with me or I'm going to agree with you. No, let's just respect each other. And I've actually learned something, because that's where it's coming from. Yeah, it's a bizarre thing, isn't it? One thing I'll say is, because obviously coming at it from a different angle to you guys, and with the platitudes thing, I think there's a big difference between like not vindictive, but just almost like a cast off, a castaway, a throwaway, I don't want to have this conversation platitude, like, you know, the ones that you've mentioned already, or just something as I can't even imagine how annoying and angry this must be to hear, but when they say, oh, it's all right, because you can always have another one, stuff like that. There's a difference between, but you could, someone who's being vindictive or someone who's just not dealing with it because they're not used to having these conversations, they might say that same sentence, but one of them, it's coming from a place of awkwardness, which is British people, we're very good at having awkward conversations, and that need to feel maybe that they have to say something, and being so mentally unprepared to go, shit, this moment is happening right now, this conversation. And it's like, what's the most cliche default comment I can come up with. And before you know it, you know, it's out of your mouth before your brain's in gear. I don't think it's meant intentionally to piss anyone off. And quite often, I mean, this reminds me a lot of some of the conversations we had on our very first episode, wasn't it? Because we didn't know what to say. And I think the best thing was just honesty, wasn't it? Not the platitudes and the cliches, because they sound so insincere.
We've all heard the rhyme, sticks and stones will break my bones, but
words will never
names or words will never hurt me. Yeah. You could almost say sticks and stones may break my bones, but words have the power to hurt me more.
Yeah.
Because they do, don't they? And that's where if you look at, like you just said there, are you young enough to have another one? Or some people I've heard before, at least they're in a better place. Or, you know, there's lots of different platitudes out there. But I think that I don't believe that anybody is saying things intentionally to hurt somebody. I think you've got to be one sick person to do something like that.
I agree with 100%.
Yeah. So I don't for one minute think people are doing it out of sheer spite or to hurt anybody. I think it's a lack of education on the ability to be able to hold a conversation that's maybe now been lost in because of things like social media and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
But so let me just pause on this point that you're making right quick, Ryan, because with the social media thing aside, because platitudes have been around way before social media, right? People, and that's what Matt was saying, like it's a generational thing. So social media has influence in the way in which we have conversations, but platitudes have preceded social media. And I think they will long outlive social media if social media ever goes away.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's going to. But to that point right there, the lack of education, the lack of preparation, because people just don't know how to handle this situation. I think that's the crux of the matter. Whoever thinks about, number one, from a parent's perspective, we're never prepared to lose our child. Number two, from the support side, family members, friends, whoever thinks that you're going to lose your child. So it's one of those things that's like, you don't know that you need to prepare for it because it's never really in someone's psyche to want to have to prepare for it.
I think if you look back on I think your point is absolutely 100% valid and I completely agree with you. I've also got another potential theory as to why we maybe now look at platitudes differently to generational is if you look at society as a whole, and I'm not just talking in the UK, I'm talking worldwide, people can be hurt by one sentence and will shout from the rooftops if they don't agree with something or if somebody said, I don't know, there might be a word in a sentence that they don't agree with. And immediately they're very vocal, they're very outspoken about, you know, how that person or whatever has been said makes them feel. In the past, platitudes have just been accepted.
Yeah.
We've never been in a world prior to what we are in now where everything is at the click of a button, where we can shout from the rooftops if we're angry about something. You know, I remember going to, let's say, a football match in the 90s where I wouldn't be very happy with how we'd played, but we never had social media to be able to go on and moan about it or look for other people's views on it. Whereas now you go to a football match and within seconds, if a player has done something wrong, bang, it's on social media and people are just there and then. So I think platitudes in the past were probably accepted because we have moved on so much socially that we're in a completely different era on what people will accept and what people won't accept. I think I've gone a long-winded way of saying that, but
maybe you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
Just ignore me for a sec. You might need to edit this, Kelly. I need a toilet. Sorry, man. I'm going to have to run to the toilet.
No, please don't edit that. Please keep that bit in. I love Matt.
What the fuck is that about?
To be honest, I think that's really disrespectful, Kelly. He never goes to the toilet during his own podcast, so he shouldn't start doing it on other people's.
That's why your wife smells.
Ryan, can you take your laptop and just go and record right outside the toilet door and just carry on, make it feel long. There he is. Did you wash your hands?
I think he's back. There you go.
Yeah, I did. And I was either that or very close to doing what Dwight did in the American Office and establishing a pee corner in the room. So it was either that, so I got to the toilet.
That's why he was so fast, because he was washing his hands at the same time as he was having a piss.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
That was
I
good.
I suppose continuing on from what we were just talking about as well, I think the work that the platitudes and stuff like this, I think as well, come back to and what we said about social media. Yeah, it has accelerated it, but I also look back to, and I've spoken especially to the dads that I've dealt with on a one-to-one basis, and I'm sure Ryan maybe has had these conversations a little bit as well around when it comes to baby loss, especially from a male perspective. This is why, bluntly, we started the podcast was it, and I'm all you guys are the same. I went secondary school in the mid-90s and it was so tough. It was so tough as far as kind of comments that were given. You know, there was no area of being able to show any kind of weakness. And then when you like, and this weren't even like the kids, this was the teachers, you know, this was that you are being influenced by, right? Would just throw a comment out there, and it's like, deal with that then. And who'd you tell? Tell on? She's a teacher, right? Yeah. And all the education around stuff wasn't there because it was seen as banter, right?
Yeah.
And listen, we've talked about this again on the podcast. I'm really pleased that I was brought up in that kind of generation looking back, because actually it built a pretty thick skin and being able to laugh at myself now, but then I look back and think some of the comments were like, wow.
How old were you at the time, Matt? Sorry.
I started secondary school in 95.
Yeah.
So 11.
Ooh, I was 10, 10. 11.
You're okay. You've asked that for you know how old it is when people start secondary school. Was that a sarcastic question?
No, I didn't. Okay. No, sorry, I'm actually being serious. I didn't know.
I can never know.
At the start. so suspicious.
Yeah. Around 10, 11, that kind of stuff, right? But again, I've talked about this before. Scouts was a big part of my life, and I was brought up by males the males who led the scout unit were like, they were ruthless with how they used to take the mick out of the kids and that, right? And we all just laughed. We all just laughed.
But is that hiding behind there? Oh, it will toughen you up, son. It will toughen you up, lad.
Well, it goes back to the man up thing, isn't it? You know, it was. Like, I remember clearly there was one incident where we were playing. We'd go on, like, weekends with, like, dads and lads, and we'd play football, and the dads were playing football with us. And there was dads going around, like, two-footing kids and stuff and things like that. But, like, we were just like... But then the kids were like rolling around, like, get up, you're fine, you know? Like, but that was, but that,
yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Run it off, lad.
Exactly.
Yeah. Run it off. The leg.
But, you know, but that's what it was then. You know, if you got injured on a football pitch playing football, your coach would come on with like a bucket and one little sponge and say, you're all right, can you run? Yeah. Well, and I'd get up and limp about the place, and then you cracked on.
But that's what I mean is that, with regard to the platitudes, I think it was accepted, and that was the way that things were dealt with. And like I say, nowadays it's completely different, because everybody's got the ability to be able to say if they're not happy, in even if they don't vocalise it They can put it in text. They can, you know, there's a way of doing things nowadays which is completely different to back then in the good old days.
But I also think what Ryan, what Matt is saying is important to highlight too, right? Mm-hmm. There's a difference between, so pain is pain, but not every pain is pain. There's a difference between the physical pain, and then there's a difference between emotional pain. Most physical pain, you can do something to help to ameliorate in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. That emotional pain, though, there isn't necessarily a quick fix. You can't necessarily go to a doctor. Like, people can go to therapists, people can go to psychiatrists, people get, you know, can get prescribed medications for mood improvement and get into mindfulness practices, and all of those things help. Yeah. So I'm not minimizing any of these coping avenues, but there's something about emotional pain that is not as cut and dry as prescribing something for physical pain. So in this era of toughen up, son, like, you know, stiff upper lip and just brush it off, be a man, and all of those things that I think we all were cut out of, there's something to be said about emotional pain is not, number one, seen or validated or even acknowledged as a legitimate kind of pain.
Yeah.
And two, it's if it does, it gets the same type of treatment as the physical pain, right? Mm-hmm. You can break an arm and go to surgery, get that arm repaired, even if you have that arm amputated, but you still have function of something, right? Like, you're not going to live with that pain for the rest of your life. Emotional pain, though, it is different. And especially that level of emotional pain, it is so different. It never goes away. Your relationship to it changes, but year after year after year after year, you're having to, in some way, shape, or form, relive the pain of not having the child that you lost there. If, in your case, Matt and Ryan, or in the case of people like myself who've experienced miscarriages, is that emotional. Like I've said to you guys before, every time I see a dad with a daughter, I'm thinking to myself, man, that should have been me. That could have been me. Right. So there's always something that's happening that is re-triggering that emotional pain. And yeah, you may not break down and start sobbing, but you might break down and start because.
And even if you don't break down and sob, but there's like the levels, isn't there? It's like the volume control and with the physical, say for, you know, you have an operation or it leaves that physical scar, but the pain of the initial physical pain has gone, but then it's a scar. It's almost like a trophy. You can see it. I think with an emotional scar is that's different because that's still there in a much more tangible way because obviously I can't relate to it the same way that you guys with your children. But just in other areas of life, it's something, you know, like relationships in my past. And that pain sticks with you. It's still present, whereas a physical scar is just, you don't feel it. You just notice it from time to time.
Absolutely.
It's a whole different kettle of fish, isn't
it? And so to flip it around, right, let's say you're out there and you're, you know, you guys play football. So you're playing football and you have an injury. I wonder if one of your lads will come up to you and be like, listen, man, everything happens for a reason. At that particular moment when you're on the ground writhing in pain, if they're going to come up to you and say, brush it off, everything happens for a reason. Most likely not.
I feel bad here now. Can I just say, because when you said that about football, I'd instantly thought of our last charity game when Matt had it, when his leg fell off. And I was one of the first people over there to him. And all I wanted to say was like, well, that's what happens when you got toes the size of yours. But instead we got some oxygen, I think, which was a better decision.
Well,
I mean, the sympathy wore off within about an hour because Dan was taking a video of me hobbling into hospital on my crutches. So, you know, but like, but yeah, but also that's an interesting one because as well, that then like linked into emotional pain for me not being able to do Cali's challenge that year because I was all lined up a month later to do that challenge, but then I couldn't do it. So then I had to deal with the guilt, all the stuff that comes with it. You feel like you're letting her down, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the emotional pain is a big one because again, like, you know, I've had people say to me that they've had said to them, oh, aren't you over that yet? That's the other one.
Holy
smokes. That's a vindictive one.
I was going to say, to be fair, there's nothing fair about it. To be more...
Yeah, nothing at all.
It's more with the people who have had earlier losses.
Well, I had somebody say that to me once. It was a girl who I used to call with. And it, I mean, we're going back a good few years now when she said it. And I tell you now, if it wasn't a girl, I'd have smashed that person through because the way they said it, like Dan used the word... it was very vindictive. It was almost like it was said to push a button and to hurt.
Wow.
I know she'd had her own, not baby loss, but I know she'd lost her dad when she was quite young. So she had an idea of what, obviously, grief, has a complete understanding of what grief is, but to be able to say something like that, I thought was awful.
Yeah, that's not nice, is it?
Yeah, it's like it is, but it is. It's one of those where you just go like, yeah. And sometimes if someone says something like that, you feel like there's no point in any. And this is the other thing that I find sometimes I don't engage anyway because there's no point in me engaging with you when you say something like that. Because
it's probably the smart thing.
One of my go-to lines now is when someone calls me the wrong name or says anything, I'm like, I've been called worse.
Yeah. Like, R. Kelly.
Yeah.
I have been called worse.
It's just some people you just have to accept that it's like, you know, I can't do anything for you or with you, so I'm just gonna remain calm, and you know it's pointless even trying to figure that side out with you because you've come in with that comment first. You're probably some kind of knobhead anyway.
So let's try to land the plane and let's just summarize what we've said so far. We've said that platitudes are, they rob people of an opportunity for genuine connection, right? With the person who is experiencing that grief, who is living. It's not even just an experience. It's a lived, it's a part of life now. For the person who has lost a child, life can never be the same. Life will never be the same. So to come and say something like everything happens for a reason, I feel like there's so much more we could say about that. But what we have said is that it shuts down an opportunity for genuine conversation, connection for the person to be able to sit in, express, process, try to gain some kind of footing within their own grief.
Because the thing is, Kelly, especially at the start, and I don't know whether you and Ryan kind of had this yourselves, but people who tend to lose a child and go through this, they overthink everything as well.
Yeah.
So when someone drops something in, Ryan's already said about the fact that it stops that grief journey happening in a sense, because then people think, well, should I be grieving as heavy as I am?
Mm-hmm.
Is this normal?
Mm-hmm.
And when a comment drops in like that, it does. People question their own grief journey. And it's like, you shouldn't need to question your own grief journey.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
It does. It encourages self-doubt.
Yeah.
That is a
great point. You start doubting. You start doubting what you're doing.
I hadn't thought of it like that, Matt. That's an amazing point.
No, it does. It just makes people think, well, actually, I'll get over it. I'll try and get over this quicker then. Because they're not given the room to, you know, deal with their grief, which is nuts, really, isn't it?
I think people just do it. They're in auto. I mean, it's day-to-day life, isn't it? How many times, you know, you've been driving somewhere and you just feel like you're in autopilot and you're going somewhere else, but like you end up start driving home because I think sometimes people just say things, they're on autopilot, and it's just having that presence of mind, isn't it? If you're going to talk to someone, fully mentally invest in that conversation. Be there, like do it. Just don't bosh out cliches and platitudes. I think it's just taking a moment and thinking, isn't it, about what you're going
to
say.
To that point, Dan, let's two things that I'm going to put on the table for us to conclude our conversation.
Okay.
What then is an appropriate response besides punching somebody in the face? So if violent retaliation is off the table,
yeah,
which no one can make any promises that they'll keep up, you know,
get someone else to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, hit man.
So
phone a friend.
If physical,
didn't you just kind of allude to one of them, really? It was just, was it just walking up, just not engaging with that person? But then they've still, that platitude's still been dropped in the first place, hasn't it? So that's still going to leave.
But
that.
I don't think you can control whether or not people drop the platitude, right?
Yeah.
Because people are just going to say what people are going to say.
Yeah.
Because of this dynamic of, well, I don't know what to say. I mean, I think the intuitive thing would be like, well, if you don't know what to say, then shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shut up. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
But there's always the impulse to, and I think that's part of a larger conversation about just how we feel like we, when we are in the face of someone who is having a tough time, we, for some reason in our own psychology, feel the need to be the person, to say the thing, to make them feel better. And I don't know where that comes from, because
I think it's almost subconscious selfishness. You want to be the hero. You want to save them.
Yes. Yes. It's very much so that Superman, Superwoman type of egotistical thing where I have to be the rescuer. I have to be the savior. I'm going to make sure that that person remembers me for being the one to get them out of the mud. And I also think the other part of that too is it is so uncomfortable to see someone grieving in such a raw way that if grief were like radiation, a platitude would be putting on protective gear to protect yourself from that.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's a great analogy.
Yeah,
because you've just made that. You've just created it. You've that visual theater that you've just said in what you've just mentioned there. Yeah, it's a great way of putting it.
I think just somebody offering their presence, just being present.
Yeah,
you know, in a conversation, nobody's saying. I'm talking now as a bereaved parent. I'm not saying to people that I want you to come out with the answer, because you haven't got the answer, because believe me, I've been looking for the answer for 15 years. But just being present, and even if the ability to be able to just be, to just listen. You know, I don't want you to say any words. Just listen, just be there, be present, and just show interest in what I'm talking about, what I'm saying. I don't want you to fix it. If I wanted somebody to fix it, I wouldn't be going to you to fix it. I'd be going to a medical professional that could give me more advice.
Mm.
You know, we can't fix everything, unfortunately. So don't try and be the person. Don't try and be the hero, because you can't be a hero in this situation.
The most respect I've had for the mates that I've still got after through this journey is the ones that early on seemed to go a little bit quiet, but then actually came into my life again a few months or whatever down the line and just said they were honest. And first of all, they apologized. And I weren't really looking for any apology because, again, I didn't even know what I was feeling at that point. But what I got from them was, I want to try and understand this. That was a big thing for me. And I thought, you know what? It's the simple things that make the most difference. I know I've talked to him about him so many times, but Rob, my best mate, he's done everything. He's done the unspectacular so spectacularly. That's what he's done, right? Brilliant. He's given me room to speak when I need to speak. He hasn't tried to offer any kind of advice or anything like this. Ryan has already, he's just been present and he's just listened. And he hasn't, like I said, when we first lost, he just went and got food for us. He didn't really know what to say or didn't say too much. Went and got food. He was just there. That's all it was. And that's all you need. You want to know that someone's there. That's it. If you can pick up the phone. And I know in my life who I can pick the phone up to, and that's an important part when I'm in my worst moments. And I know they'll do what they can to help me. It's not rocket science.
It's not. So in the spirit of together we care, here's one final mental picture. Think of someone's grief as entering in a museum. And the person grieving is the tour guide. Now, you've never been in this museum before. And so you don't know where the exhibits are. You don't know where the bathrooms are. Matt, you don't know.
Kelly, I was hoping you weren't going to let us hang. I was hoping that was going to follow.
I'm glad there's been a break there because I couldn't get Ben Stiller and Night of the Living Museum out of my head and all the things coming to life.
Like you don't know where anything is. The person who does know where all of the exhibits are and how they're arranged and why they're arranged in the ways that it's arranged is precisely the person who's grieving. And so my job coming in into that museum is to follow the tour guide's lead, which is exactly what you just talked about your best mate did. He followed your lead. He didn't speak when he didn't need to speak. He waited for you to give him the cues for him to then know what he needed to do. And I think that could be a helpful way for someone who is in the presence of a bereaved parent, a bereaved mom or dad, to let that be your compass. The understanding that you are stepping into a completely foreign field that is also foreign to the person living it, but they have way more experience than you do. And so all you got to do is just follow their lead.
It's just being open to being emotionally intelligent as well. Yeah. Just be open to.
Well, it is, isn't it? Communication skills and emotional intelligence, knowing when to say something and when to not, or in your case, bring your dominoes.
Exactly.
What did he bring you?
It was actually Subway, to be fair. And even in the midst of our grief, when we were in the room with Callie, I was done with hospital food at that point. So like Rob was literally like, he actually said to me, I can't sit and watch you eat this stuff anymore. I've got to go and get you some food. So he just went off to Subway and come back. So, but yeah.
Six inch or 12.
What did you say then? I mean that.
I said 6 inch or 12.
It's a very personal question that is, Dan.
I know. They know what they're doing in Subway, don't they, with their marketing.
What was it though?
Can't go 6 inch.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Oh, no.
No, you've got to.
I was going to say, even in my grief, get back and get me a 12 inch, bitch. Yeah.
That's literally the angriest I've ever heard, Matt.
Gentlemen, thank you. I can't thank you enough for the time that we spent in conversation, for your insights, again, for your podcast. Thank you for being brave enough to start this back in 2020 and putting your experience out there. I've said it to you individually. I've said it to you privately. I love to say it publicly. You guys are trailblazers, true trailblazers. Taking the most unthinkable circumstance, situation that could ever happen to someone and using it in a way that keeps the light of the child that you have lost alive. And what a lasting legacy for generations to come, the community of bereaved parents that you've welcomed into the Still Parents podcast community. The bravery of someone who hasn't experienced that also being part of this journey. I mean, it is an absolute honor and privilege that for the short amount of time I have on this earth, I've been able to cross paths with you guys. And I can't thank you enough for your friendship, for your mentorship, and for your support over the years. So thank you and kudos to all of you.
Sounds like a platitude to me, that, Kelly. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Yeah.
Thank you, Kelly. That's wonderful. Thank you, Kelly.
100%. I'm right back at you as well.
Absolutely
right back at you. When are you coming over to visit? Or when are we going over to America?
Whenever my wife and I can get our budget stuff together, we'll make a trip to the UK.
Yeah, that's the next step, isn't it? I think we need to do that.
Absolutely.
Kelly, thank you for having us on.
Thank you, mate. The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.